Welcome to episode 156 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week we read Rurouni Kenshin by Nobuhiro Watsuki. And now, the cast begins.
Since this is like your jam.
Okay. I'm trying to think of like what we actually do for the intro because you always do it, and I just go hi.
Welcome to another adjective episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. Hanging out with such and such and such and such, and this is what we read. And what did you think?
Okay.
Easy. Tell it. So, you can do it.
Let me type some notes.
Hey David, check out this link.
Oh my god.
That is what is inside your child's face.
So I've been... I went to the WTF subreddit for some reason. And holy shit, there's some crazy stuff on there.
Yes.
And so they had something, pictures of something called hyperdontia, where it's like your teeth grow, you get like all kinds of different like formations of teeth, and it is like crazy, like people growing teeth from the roof of their mouths.
Holy shit.
I did that. Not so bad. I had to have like crazy oral surgery because some of my teeth developed like really high up, like in my sinus cavity. But like close to it. It was not as bad as one would think, and my teeth look perfectly normal now, except I have no canine teeth. Because my mouth is so small, they had to, like, pull them all out when I got the adult teeth in.
Hmm.
But yeah, it's not fun. And that picture is horrifying.
Yeah, that's just, like, apparently an average kid's face.
That is too many teeth.
It's, like, freaky. They're, like, lodged in the jaw, like, way up to the nose. Like,
I do not like that.
Here, I'll send you something disgusting.
Your son has that face, dude. Doesn't it freak you out? Look at that.
Here.
What is that?
That's what a child's skull looks like before losing the baby teeth.
I'm sorry for the link I just sent you, by the way.
Oh, God.
You're sorry for it?
Yeah.
Do I even want to click on this?
Ah! Oh, God. Okay, I did not have that.
Duh, no, God.
So many.
I'm closing
it's like a
that out.
Shark.
I just it came up with the pictures and I closed it out.
He's really squeamish with that kind of stuff.
There's just shit I think I don't need to see in life.
I am too. Like I can't watch like doctor shows when there people are doing surgery.
Yeah.
Can't watch it.
I can't.
But I was curious about hyperdontia, so I was like I didn't look up the like I saw the pictures on Reddit and then I went to Wikipedia and read about it. I didn't look at any more pictures. But, yeah.
Yeah.
So I was not afflicted with that, but I did have teeth in the roof of my mouth really weird. But it was nowhere near as nasty.
That's going to be in my dreams tonight. Thank you.
It's like a shark baby.
It's okay. It happens. Shark baby.
With like the rows of teeth.
It's hot stuff. In here.
It's really not that hot in here.
Yeah, this blanket's so heavy.
Well, you're hot because you're wearing a blanket.
Oh, I need a Snuggie.
Oh, yeah, it's that time of year. I can break out my Snuggie.
I need one so hard.
I have a Spider-Man Snuggie.
I know you do. You got it last year's work, White Elephant.
Mm-hmm. I love it. It's amazing.
What's that?
They came out with something called that's more
in that pile.
It's like a level up from the Snuggie.
How do you level up from a Snuggie?
Yeah, what is that?
Is it like pajamas?
No. What was it called? Man, I can't remember what it's called.
Can't remember it either.
I'll figure it out.
Okay.
We should probably record this episode.
Yeah, I'm ready to start.
All right.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another manslaying episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. I'm Jen, and I'm here with David.
Hey.
And Andy.
Hello.
And this week, we read Rurouni Kenshin by Nobuhiro Watsuki, and this is what got me into comics in the first place, so I am so ready to talk about this. Just to start off, no pressure, did you guys like this?
I did, actually. I really did.
Cool.
There were some frames where I was like, I don't know, this, like, it's hard to explain. I have this little, like, pet peeve with anime and manga when they completely break the art style, like, to get with the googly eyes and, like, the whap, 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 whap.
Yeah, they do that.
Like, those frames kind of bug me sometimes, and I get that they're there for humor and comedy, but I feel like they pull me out of the experience of reading the comic. And I think it's just one of those signatures of the genre that I have to kind of push through, because you can push through it. Like, I loved what was the other one we did, that the other one we read that had that Full Metal Alchemist does it a lot, and I was a, you know, if it's good enough you can push through, and I pushed through. This was pretty good.
Cool. So we were chatting before this episode started, and there is some historical background and just like stuff that goes into this, so I figure I might as well just explain a little.
All right.
So this takes place in the 1800s during the Meiji Restoration, and that's when the imperialists revolted against the Tokugawa shogunate, who basically ruled over Japan for like a long, long time. And this happened after Commodore Matthew Perry, who did not star in Friends, arrived in Japan with the Black Fleet.
That fucking threw me off in the notes so hard. I thought you were making a joke about the one dude and how he looks in the comic.
You said that to me, and I was just like, oh god, is that actually his name? But no, so he was a U.S. Navy dude, and he came to Japan and kind of opened it up to westernization, and the whole country freaked out and then had a revolution. So that's our background, and this is 10 years after that revolution. And during that time, Kenshin, the main character, was the Hitokiri Batosai. Batosai refers to the way he uses his sword, like, he keeps it sheathed and then draws it really quickly to kill people. Ah. And Hitokiri is just an assassin. And I think it was a title, like, bestowed upon really talented assassins, maybe? I'm not so sure on that. But
is it, like, government bestowed, or, like, is bestowed by legend and reputation?
I think more reputation than anything. I think you had to be a pretty freaking scary dude to get that title. Yeah. And what's cool is some of these people are actually based on real figures. So Kenshin, there was not a guy named Kenshin, but there was a famous Hitokiri during the revolution that Watsuki based his character on, who was kind of like a small, effeminate dude, and I think that's where some of those mannerisms come from. Mm-hmm. And then, let's see, I think they mentioned the Ishin Shishi. Mm-hmm. At a couple points in here, and those were basically the revolutionaries.
Okay, because they were saying that Kenshin should be an Ishin Shishi. Ishin? Ishu? Isha?
Ishin Shishi.
Ishin, okay, so I actually put it in the notes right. All right, go me.
Good job, Andy.
I'm terrible with names, you all know this. I'm going to fuck them up all episode. So they were saying he's supposed to be one. So, like, after the revolution, these Ishin Shishi kind of, like, became members of the government. Like, they became, like, political positions almost.
Yeah, I mean, if you consider, like, a lot of the time when there's a revolution, the people who are really prominent in it end up running the new government. Mm-hmm. So that's why everyone's saying, oh, we could offer you a position. And he gets a lot of respect from government officials, and they kind of ignore the law where he's not supposed to carry his katana.
Yeah.
So that was kind of his background there. And, oh, I don't think we see Saito in this. No, okay. Don't. He was a real guy, and he was in another faction that worked with the revolutionaries, but not relevant to this volume. So
okay,
that can be for another day. So, this is probably, I don't know, one of the best done historical fiction mangas I've read. I mean, I guess I haven't read that many.
but it's cool that it is based on historical fact. Like, I watch things like Samurai Champloo, and it's like period set, but I know it's all bullshit. So I think it's really awesome that Watsuki went out and did a bunch of research for his manga and like looked up real names of people and tried to associate his characters with these real people, like get an authentic like setting for place and time to get a really like strong feel of it.
That's yeah. Awesome. And I honestly don't know how historically accurate some of it is, but I know it's grounded in historicism.
I mean, at least it seems to take place over real events, right?
Yeah, and
like the major historical events in the world of this manga are ones that really happened in Japan, right?
Yes. And the farther in you get, like, the more you learn about his background, the more of those historical events are actually incorporated, which I think is kind of neat. And then some of the characters are, they're taken totally out of context. Like, they're not who they were in real life, because the author had to fit them in to his weird universe here, where physics just don't apply. But there are people who were important revolutionaries who are featured in this comic, and I think that's kind of neat too.
Yeah, because it's hard to do a period piece or to like, I don't know, I feel like there's so many things that are set in feudal Japan in quotation marks, right? Or like recently post-feudal Japan or whatever like the Meiji Restoration era is, right? And it's like, it's basically lazy writing for I want to use swords and those like weird flip-flop, clop, wood things. What are those called?
Geta.
Yeah, those.
Yeah, they're called geta.
Geta?
I don't know how to spell it.
Because that's how I'm able to, like, mindset pronounce things.
I think it's just G-E-T-A.
Okay, just geta. Okay. Because those things are cool. Swords are cool. I feel like setting something...
You're talking about the... Oh, sorry. You're talking about the shoes that that one guy wore in Samurai Champloo, right?
Yeah, that like the crazier guy wore.
Yeah, I don't remember what his name is either.
Yeah, well, there was the restrained guy, and the crazy guy, and the crazy guy wore the geta.
The restrained guy's Jean. I remember that, but I don't remember what the other guy's name is. Oh, Mugen.
Mugen, that's right.
Sorry.
Mugen, Jean, and Fu.
Yeah. So Mugen's shoes, like, there's something inherently cool about setting a story in that world. The same way, like, I feel there's something inherently cool about setting something in a Western, or something inherently cool about setting something in the Star Wars universe. Like, as much as the prequels sucked, hey, still had fucking lightsabers and force powers. Like, to a certain degree, like, if you want to be a lazy writer, your comic or your manga might suck if you set it in the feudal era, but at least, hey, it's got fucking geta and katana and sword fights and shit, and that's cool. Like, there's the things that are inherently cool about a certain genre, and I think it's neat that it's not just lazily done that way. It's like actually taking that and fleshing it out and making it whole and rounding it off and making that world feel real rather than just like a writing trick.
Yeah, because I think that there are very few people who do not feel in their heart that samurai are cool.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
they're wrong.
Yeah, exactly, right? Samurai are just awesome, and it's so easy to take advantage of that and just, or kind of, I mean, a couple weeks ago we talked about One Piece, and for a long time, pirates were that thing.
Yeah.
Everyone made something about pirates, but it's hard to do it well, and I think it's the same thing with samurai, or Jedi, or cowboys. I mean, it's just so easy to take something that people inherently feel is really awesome and make it good.
Because, like, the gunfight is inherently cool, right? You can take any gunfight out of any movie, almost, and the gunfight itself will be cool. The thing that makes or breaks it being a good story is how the gunfight feels and how well it's set in the story and how important the characters are and how much you really believe that one of them, like, is gonna, like, it's the setting around that element that's what really makes it good or bad, whereas that element's just like, okay, that's, you can just pull that out and it's awesome. Like, you can just pull a samurai out and he's gonna be awesome because it's a fucking samurai.
And I think there's also kind of an interest in the whole concept of, like, you know, the last chivalrous, honorable warrior, and he fights for whatever reason with a cool sword. So, I mean, it does provide a really good setting if it's done well.
Right, because the Rurouni, I hadn't heard the term Rurouni before, but that's kind of, not like a trope, but like the wandering, what's the word that I usually hear? Ronin.
Ronin.
Yeah.
Ronin, yeah.
Like the kind of wandering warrior is almost a trope in this kind of like feudal setting genre of like period manga. But it's probably a trope because it's cool. But it works especially well with Kenshin, because as you read the comic, you get that he could be a guy in a nice cushy life. He could be one of the Ishin Shishi in the government and have some position and, you know, have a ton of respect and money and power. And he's just like, no, it's kind of not what I was doing it for. No, I'm just going to walk around a bit. It's cool.
What's interesting, too, is we often hear the term Ronin, but I think this is the one and only time I've heard the term Rurouni. And it's the title of the comic. It's a huge feature that he is a wanderer.
Mm-hmm.
And a Ronin is a masterless samurai, and I think that's considered, like, kind of dishonorable, or, like, you're not fulfilling your purpose as a warrior. It's like being a knight without a liege lord. What you gonna do?
Yeah, you're just going around being a bully is what you are.
Yeah, stab some folk, that's not cool. But he's not a Ronin. He's not looking for a master, he never wanted one, he's just chilling.
He never had one, he was just an assassin.
Yeah.
Right, like, he was just out there fighting because he needed to fight, and then the fighting was done, and it's like, well, what am I going to do now? Just fucking chill and walk around a bit. Like, for him, it's not a matter of losing his master, because I think that's the dishonor associated with Ronin, is that their master was allowed to die. That kind of sense that they failed somehow.
Whereas, right, they didn't protect their master.
Yeah, whereas with Kenshin, there's none of that. They won. If anything, he's the opposite of a Ronin. Like, he protected him so... He protected his dude so well that they won a war and overturned the government. So it's like the opposite of it, but there's probably still that sense of connotation of, like, the lost, wandering character.
Well, a lot of them, it seemed like his opponents in the story seemed to look down on him or make fun of him because he didn't have anything to do, or because he was clinging to the past.
Ah, yeah.
By carrying his sword and by being, or by following, like, the way the samurai code, or Bushido, I guess is the word, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because didn't somebody in the comic tell him, like, this is the Meiji era, it's a new world, you know, like, it's all about money and power and not about your sword?
I think it was the Yakuza guy in the Yakuza story. I think it was volume 3 or chapter 3.
Okay.
I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah, but I remember somebody did specifically, like, talk to him that way. Like, dude, come on. This is not how we do things anymore. There's a reason most people are cool with the no sword law. Because you don't fucking need swords anymore. And you're just stubbornly still walking around with one. Why? Because you want to get a ticket?
That's actually something that I really like about this comic, and it's like this exploration of a theme where the way of life is dying out, because this is the end of the age of the samurai. It's forbidden to carry a sword, and that's like fundamental to being a samurai in a lot of ways, the ability to fight. And here, like, it's a peaceful time, and that's what he was hoping for, but Kenshin is a relic.
Yeah, he's like an anachronism, right?
Yeah, he has no place in this society. And I think it's actually really interesting because it's kind of a commentary on what happens when you take Western culture and bring it into another civilization and, like, how those two things interact. Because, I mean, if you look at the army guys, they're dressed in Western garb. They don't mm-hmm. wear traditional Japanese clothing. They use Western weapons. Like, they have sabers, not katanas. They have guns. And it's just, like, a whole way of life has been wiped out. And the question is it for the better? And Probably, because it is peaceful, but people are not necessarily acclimating well. And I think we see that not so much with Kenshin, but maybe Sanosuke, and then, like, the Yakuza guys try to take advantage of it pretty heavily.
Yeah. So, I think it's the kind of sense of, like, if you take all the weapons away, the only people who have the weapons are the criminals. Like, it's easy to be the bully Yakuza if nobody else has a sword. Or gun, or anything.
Or I think, I don't know if we get it in the first volume, but I know throughout this series we see a lot of, like, dirty or kind of asshole-ish cops.
And yeah, we get that here.
Oh, yeah. The cops here are fucking terrible. Like, they were going to kill that everybody in the entire crowd. Like, what the fuck?
That seems so unnecessary in, like, an era of peace, too, right? Like,
yeah.
If you're supposed to not be having war on anything, there's probably no need to murder a dozen people.
And it makes, like, because of that incident, right? Like, people are calling Kenshin a relic. They're saying that he's not necessary anymore. But then you get an encounter like that, and you're like, okay, if it's peacetime and all of the people are supposed to be trusting the new government and the restoration and believing that it's peacetime, they're just going to be standing around fucking defenseless. Like, and if they put their trust in the government and the government puts these police out there, maybe you should be carrying your own sword just in case. Like, it makes you kind of question the entire foundation of this new order that they have that's put in there. And so it makes you... The comic does a really good job of showing you that Kenshin is obsolete, but making you ask the question, is he really? Like, because he's coming in pretty handy quite a bit here.
Yeah, and, you know, when you see this, it totally makes sense that he would never fit into this new government where people are being so dickish. Because, I don't know, like, does it strike you as something he would ever be able to go along with? I don't think so.
Yeah. I know. No. No.
So I guess... Go on.
I was just going to transition to all the sword technique style fighting stuff in here. Is that okay?
Yeah.
So, there's a whole lot of words in here about sword fighting and techniques that I don't fucking know at all. And I don't mean that, like, it didn't necessarily lessen my experience of the comic, because there's tons of other things I read that I don't really fucking know anything about. Like, the only reason I know what Centaurio means is because there's a subtitle, you know, but, like, it doesn't take it away from me. It just makes me, it gets to be, every time I read it, it's kind of like a jumble. And it takes me like 4 or 5 times to read it on the page before I recognize, okay, that's Kenshin style. Okay, that's Karu style. And it's almost like there's supposed to be a hierarchy of them, right? It, like, one is better than the other necessarily. I don't know.
It depends. I think Karu herself is a little weaker. So, like, her style's not as strong. And she's a master, quote unquote, but her dad was the one who founded it. So maybe... like, if he was alive, he'd be a match. I think we're supposed to have a takeaway that Kenshin is a lot stronger and faster than other people.
Yeah.
And he does, in the anime and the rest of the manga, run up against several people who have very dangerous sword styles that have challenged him very greatly. But his thing is he's kind of studied this ancient technique that he and this other guy, his master, are the only two people who know it in the world. And it's just for killing, and it's like super special secret technique that no one else can do. And it's very skilled.
See, and that itself is its own advantage, because if you go up in a fight with somebody like that, you have no idea what they're going to be like to fight, which is kind of what you get from Sensuke's conversation before their fight. How he's like, I went around and looked for information on you because it's kind of a smart thing to do, so you can understand your enemy before you go into the fight. You know? And, like, that makes total sense. Except then he couldn't find anything. Which immediately puts Kenshin at an advantage. Because all Kenshin has to do is see Sanzuke's weapon and be like, okay, yeah, I know what you're going to do with that. There's kind of a limited number of things you can do with that giant fucking thing.
Yeah.
But so not knowing what Kenshin's style is like is already an advantage for Kenshin just immediately. So I kind of get that sense from the interplay of them talking about the different styles and all of that. It just, like, it's one of those things that as I was reading, I realized every time I came across it, I just went, oh, they're using Ryu's style. Cool. All right.
So I think Ryu just literally means style in Japanese. Kenshin practices Hitenmitsurugi Ryu, which I probably butchered the pronunciation of. And it's a form of Batojutsu. Batojutsu is using the sword and the hilt in conjunction to fight.
Okay.
So, for instance, like, you always see him, he just keeps his sword sheathed, and then he pulls it out really quickly and, like, whacks people with it.
Yeah.
So that's, I think, his concept, the concept of Batojutsu. And then, as you go on, this is certainly a shonen manga, so what happens is he'll start yelling out, like, the names of moves.
Yeah, he did that right at the end. I was like, yeah, we're getting into it.
Yeah, it becomes, like, really common, and it's one of my least favorite things about this, because I don't like it when people just, like, announce what they're about to do when they do it in a fight.
See, but that's what I'm saying. He can do it because nobody else knows what the fuck it means.
Yeah.
It's not like he's going out there with, like, the most common fighting style, naming off the moves as he's doing it, which would be fucking stupid if anybody ever does that to him. But, like, for him, he can... I almost see it as, like, a form of showing off. Like, hey, buddy, here's the name of the move I'm gonna fuck you up with. And there ain't shit you can do about it, because I know you don't, like, know what it is.
So goofy. And then it's, like, everyone starts doing this, so, like, Kaoru does it, and it's kind of like, well, everyone knows what you're doing. And then later in, Sanosuke learns how to, like, punch things in a really crazy way so they explode. And he, like, yells that out a lot, and it's like, dude, just punch, no yell. I don't know.
You know when I first thought Sanosuke was awesome? Because the whole comic, I'm like, okay, this guy is just like, all right, whatever. He's kind of like a almost stock enemy. Like, he's like a stock volume one enemy for manga, I felt, for quite a while, until he punched the revolver apart between his fists, and I was like, yeah, that's looking sick. That's like, right, that's like one rung below putting the sword in your mouth to fight, like,
yeah.
That moment when he punches it apart, I'm like, oh, you're a badass, aren't you? And then I wanted to know what the fuck that weapon was. After he did that, I was like, what the hell is he carrying? He's that strong.
Yeah, he's like a really good example of the extreme crap you see in shonen, where it's just like, well, that's totally unrealistic, but totally awesome.
Yeah. Like, oh, God, I was watching, what was it? You guys ever watch Honest Trailers?
No.
On YouTube? They take clips from a movie, and they get a guy with, like, that dramatic movie voice, and they make, like, a 3-minute trailer for the movie that's more honest than the trailer originally was. And I watched the one for Pacific Rim, and it called Pacific Rim either the most awesome dumb movie or the dumbest awesome movie. and it said that it couldn't tell which one it was, but either way, it couldn't wait for the sequel. And I think that when stuff like this comes up in manga, now it reminds me exactly of that. Like, when he punches that pistol apart, that's either the most awesome dumb thing or the dumbest awesome thing. But either way, I want to see him do it more. I want to see him punch more swords apart.
If you like him punching, you should keep reading this comic, because he punches so many people and things, it's absurd.
Good, because when he finally gets the sword out, I'm like, oh, buddy, you're going to get fucked up. There's no way. How do you beat people with that? You have to be so slow with a giant fucking weapon like that.
So, I think there might have been some version of this sword in real life, but it was supposed to be wielded by dudes on horses. Maybe that's something that was made up as part of this, but just know, like, it's gotta weigh 100 pounds, 200 pounds, I don't know, if it's pure steel. Like, you're not gonna swing that around and be effective.
Maybe, like, if you're on horse, like, you would kind of, like, drag it alongside you. And then, like, sideswipe another animal? Like, sideswipe another dude on a horse?
Yeah. Or maybe it was made for taking down horses. That would make sense.
You like, you just kind of, like, got to stand there holding it up, facing the horse, and wait for the horse to run into it?
Could be.
Oh, there
it is. I remember seeing a sword similar to that in other anime. Oh, in Naruto, there's a guy with a sword like that.
Okay, so this is... it is a fictional sword, according to Wikipedia.
Oh, damn.
I know, right?
I wanted to buy one and put it on the mantle.
Well, you probably could.
Hold on. But there was a Chinese anti-cavalry weapon in the Song Dynasty that was similar in proportion and did exist. So, yes, this was kind of real.
Sick.
So it's based on a true story, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah, that makes me happy.
Oh, apparently it's in Naruto, too.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
Okay. So I wasn't listening to you because I was reading Wikipedia. Sorry. Oh, and next week's comic, there's somebody that uses it. Well, I don't know if they use it in the comic, but it's in somebody in Berserk uses it, too.
Mm-hmm.
His main character, Guts. The main character of next week is named Guts. Okay, I can't wait to read next week.
Next week is going to be crazy. Okay.
So on the opposite spectrum of awesome, there's the kid, Yahiko.
Okay.
So.
Right, do you guys agree with me that he's on the opposite spectrum of awesome from Sensuke? He's kind of just a little shit.
Well, yeah, he's definitely that.
He is a twat.
Does he ever get awesome?
Define awesome. So, that should be an answer.
Okay, yeah, that is.
He is always a bit of a shit because I think that's his trope and that's, like, his role. Later, like, much later in, he's really brave. And I think he definitely has a pair on him now. Like, he is willing to get the crap beat out of him by a mob boss to mouth back, right? Like, he's a brave child. He's that guy.
So he's the guy who's willing to go in and get his ass kicked for his principles, and then they kick his ass for so long that Kenshin shows up, kind of a thing?
Yeah, and I think he becomes more effective. Like, I recall he's useful in some fight scenes, but the focus of the manga, for as long as I can remember, is pretty much the adults.
Okay. Do they stay? The other question I have is, do they stay, like, in Tokyo with this dojo the entire time?
No. And
okay, because I was going to say, if they do, then the name of the comic's kind of misleading. It should just be Kenshin, because if in the second chapter he stops being a Rurouni, it'd be really misleading.
Well, Kaoru, like, suffers a lot of angst in fear that he's going to Rurouni it up some more later in, and at one point, he goes to Kyoto, and shit gets awesome. And I will say, the anime is broken up into three arcs. The first one takes place, like, here. This is the first part of it. The second place is the Kyoto arc, and it is badass beyond belief. It is worth watching. And don't watch the third one, it's bad. Because they started making it when there was no manga to base it off of, so they were just like, roll stuff and things, and blah, blah, blah. Really terrible. Yeah, and... like, later they made OVAs and stuff to compensate and tell the actual story, but it just diverges at that point. It's really bad. But yeah, they go to Kyoto, and it's so cool, and I'm not going to spoil or anything, but watch it. Just someone out there must. I gotta spread this.
I think I might start watching, because, you know, when I was younger, like, in high school, and I would watch Toonami late at night when Toonami used to show anime... Was that what... Did you mind Toonami show anime?
Or yeah.
Yeah, else? Yeah. I remember seeing it on... I remember catching it on Toonami as well, but I never really got into it, so...
See, I feel like I wasted so much time because I never was able to get to the TV when this was on, but I could get to the TV when Inuyasha was on. And that shit was so fucking bad, and I just had it on in the background so much. But it was the only thing that was on that was, like, cartoony and animated. So I just left it on and feel like I wasted so much time with that on the television. So I need to experience some form of penance. So I think I will watch this out of penance and out of looking forward to the awesomeness in Kyoto. Because this guy is legitimately, like, he comes off the page as pretty badass.
So, I gotta say, it you will like this. Okay. I can almost guarantee that. Because imagine if you took fight scenes in DBZ, but they were not screaming for 3 episodes straight. They were actually epic, and everyone was fucking kung fu fighting the entire time and being a total badass about it. And it was a fight between good and evil. It's good.
You know what? We should do a Dragon Ball series one day. No. Because, no, you know, like, I feel like whenever we review comics, like, it's the go-to to stomp on is Dragon Ball Z. But that's also, I think, the go-to because for some reason, fucking everybody has watched it. Like, it's terrible, but there's something about it that has to be, there's some kernel in there that has to be good.
I'm going to go off on my conspiracy theory that I was actually telling someone else today. My boyfriend and I just finished watching Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood, and he doesn't watch anime, but he was like, oh, this is so great, it's the best thing ever. And why don't they have this in America? Like, why isn't there more of this? And my theory is, for a very long time, they were only importing shonen. And it's likely, at least in my conspiracy theory head, because it's the most profitable. Because shonen tends to be, like, 1 billion episodes long.
Mm-hmm.
It's a lot of fight scenes. It's not super plot driven, so you can jump in at any time, and you can capture boys from like the age of 8 to 12 or whatever, which generates a lot of money because children are a major driver of purchases. Like, you whine and whine to your mom, like, oh, I want this DVD, I want this action figure, I want this game, and then they buy it, right? Mm-hmm. So that's my theory, that we get DBZ because DBZ is likely profitable, not necessarily because it's like, I mean, okay, so it's super well known, but it's, everyone agrees, it's not high caliber.
it's such a polite way of putting it. Not high caliber.
I've watched it more than once all the way through, so I it was fun, but
yeah. And you know, like, I talk smack on it a lot. I've watched all the way through, and then when one of my employees got back from a month in Japan, he came back and we were sitting there on lunch break, and on our lunch break is we'd watch television, and he was like, hey guys, can we watch Dragon Ball Z today? And we watched like the first 20 episodes of DBZ before we got fucking tired of them screaming.
Yep.
I think we got like 3 episodes past, what, over 9,000?
That is my breaking point at this time. Like, if I try to watch it with someone who's never seen it, I get to that episode and I'm just like, I can't handle this anymore.
See, and I think it would be more beneficial to not start there, because I think it's like Kenshin starts out with the characters being super badass, right? Like, it starts out with the legend of the Hitori
Batosai.
Right? Hikori? Hitori?
Hitokiri.
Hitokiri. I was going to say Hitomi, but I knew that was wrong. So, like, the Hitokiri Batosai, like, it starts off with a tale of a legend about how badass this motherfucker is. And you're like, okay, yeah, sure. And then, like, a chapter later, he, like, straight up beats the crap out of, like, 20 dudes. And you're like, oh, that's pretty badass. And then you see him beat a guy who punched a revolver in half. And you're like, okay, really fucking badass. Like, it doesn't take very long for this comic to ramp up your feeling of how badass these characters are. And I feel like Dragon Ball Z, it does not do that at the beginning whatsoever. It takes forever before you feel like any of these people are any kind of cool.
I think that is a fair assessment.
So I mean, that's a problem with that versus a strength of this. Like, I feel like in One Piece we were talking about a couple weeks ago, like, you don't get a sense of how badass these people are, really. And you don't even think I don't think you get a sense of Luffy being badass in the first comic at all. I think the sense you get a person being at a badass in the first trade of One Piece is Zoro when he puts the fucking third sword in his mouth.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, this guy's fucking cool. I don't even care about Luffy. This guy's fucking cool. Right? But it, like, it, that as much as I love One Piece, doesn't ramp up as well as this does. Like, that's a strength of this manga, I think, that you immediately kind of buy into how cool these characters are when they go into their fight scenes, which I think is really important for this genre of manga. And it's not just important, like, as, like, getting the buyer to read in, but I think it's also important from the sense of he has this strength as a person, and through his character, he's deciding not to use it, and he's deciding to use it only in these specific instances, you know, and the author uses the strength of Kenshin to define Kenshin's character. And so I think if you can get the reader to buy into that strength, then it makes you buy into the character equally hard. And so I think that's a really big strength of this comic and the feeling of badassness of these characters.
I think, too, there's a lot of comics characters that have things happen to them almost by happenstance. Like, they kind of stumble their way through life.
Hmm.
And Kenshin seems very purposeful, so I think he fits more the concept of, like, the stereotypical hero. He drives himself towards what he wants or, you know, what needs to be achieved. And he just does it instead of, like, having lucky breaks over and over and over. So, like, I don't know, like, in One Piece, Luffy fell down that whirlpool, and he's like,
so many
whatever.
Lucky breaks.
Yeah, right? And I think that's really amusing and fun, but it's a totally different tone in some ways, and it's harder. Like, Luffy is a paragon person. He's a good guy, straight up. And so is Kenshin, but they're good in different ways.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually have a note about Kenshin in our notes here. He has two personalities. One side is, like, this really goody-goody paragon. And the other side is a ruthless serial killer. And I think it's the juxtaposition between those two things that make him so interesting. Because, you know, he does have the funny faces, like Full Metal Alchemist style. And he makes that weird noise, which if you watch the anime, he goes, Oro! In the anime. I can't even do it. Like, the voice actress for him is so... It's such a strange noise. And only he says it. It's like his trademark.
Hmm.
And it's really goofy and silly. And then all of a sudden, he's like murdering people in flashbacks and such. And it's like, these are two separate human beings. There's no way they could be the same. And I think that makes it easier to get the reader going on, like, who is he really? And wanting to find out more about his past and who he is now and how he reconciles those two things.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of what I like about his character.
Yeah. And I think, like, to put it on the spectrum, Luffy would be chaotic good.
Yes.
Definitely chaotic. And I think Kenshin would be kind of neutral good. He has an idea of a code, but it's not necessarily lawful good. He hasn't joined the government to try and make the government good and use the government to do good. He opted out of that, but he's not chaotic good either. And I think he's good, he's good, he's good, he's good, he's good. And then as soon as you start fucking with people, then he's not good no more.
Yeah, and if you get farther into his background, if you keep reading, you realize that his reasons for joining the Ishin Shishi in the first place, like, and becoming an assassin, are pretty thought out. Like, this dude has a plan. So he's not just kind of seeing things and reacting like a chaotic character might. He's a little more calculated.
So interesting. That's certainly not obvious from this first volume.
Yeah, it's not.
I am restraining myself so hard giving all the awesome spoilers.
So then go ahead.
And also just nerding out on, like, all the little factoids about this, but yeah.
So let me ask another question. Mm-hmm. The sword that he has in this, with the back of the sword being sharpened and the front being dull, huh?
Okay, you've got me. That was the thing I was afraid of you asking. I'm going to nerd out on you now.
Well, I'm just going to ask, is that the sword that he had during the revolution?
Nope.
Okay.
So
that is another interesting point then, because then he chose that sword to, like, purposefully restrain himself, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, okay, you've unleashed
All right, go,
this.
Go.
You brought it upon yourself. So
yeah, I'm interested.
The Sakobatsu is the reverse edge sword, and it was forged by, like, this one blacksmith who only made one as a sign of penance, and Kenshin wields it. And it's because his form of Batojutsu cannot operate without killing people. Mm-hmm. It's, like, impossible for him to even move without killing people, basically. So he got this special sword, and the interesting thing about it to me is that such a thing is actually physically impossible. If you forged a katana like that, it'd just break, I think.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that is impossible.
So, I don't know. That was my nerdy aside. But, yeah, it's his penance. It's also a way to get around the legality of it, because he can say, I'm not actually carrying a katana. It's not a killing weapon. He's carrying around a weird metal stick, basically.
And I think one of one of the policemen he encounters said something like, oh, you know, we can just arrest him because he's not going to fight us. I forget, that's not exactly what happened, but it was right before the sword-wielding policeman showed up.
Yeah. Yeah, they were like, oh, he's not going to fight us with this sword, we're fine, it's okay. But I think it's interesting that he's wielding that sword, because we talk about, like, the two personalities, right? And I think, I get the sense that a sort of switch flips in his head when he decides it's time to start fighting. He flips the switch, and I think if he were carrying any other sword, he couldn't even switch to a different style. He wouldn't have not necessarily the restraint, but it's like, this is how he fights, and he's practiced this way, and this is what he does. And like you say, like, people would just, they would die. They would just have to die. There would be no other way around it. So, like, this is his way of restraining himself when maybe he couldn't consciously do so.
You hit the nail on the head.
Yeah! But that then, this is good writing.
And you do want to see what happens when that sword gets flipped around.
Yeah, I do. I'm gonna start watching this. I'm gonna go put on my, is it on Netflix? Let me go see.
I don't know, but I am so excited.
I'm gonna put it on my list of shows.
I want to get know more of this. When it was on TV on Toonami, I didn't get into it, but I'm glad we get a chance to go back to it.
So I actually want to take an aside to make a recommendation, and it's that so I said watch the first two arcs of the anime, maybe even before, in the midway, it doesn't matter when you do that. There's an OVA that came out in two parts called Samurai X. And that was the name for the American release, Trust and Betrayal. It's a duo, and it tells the story of his past. And it's one of the highest rated OVAs of all time. I highly recommend it. And if you want to watch it even before you watch the anime, that would still make sense. So it's not like spoilery or anything, because the anime diverged from the manga enough that it doesn't cover the same things.
Mm-hmm. What was it called again? Samurai
X.
Okay.
Trust and Betrayal.
I'm literally putting it on my television watch list right now.
Also, for you and
Betrayal correctly.
Any listeners who do want to watch this, finish reading or watching anything else before you read or before you watch Samurai X Reflections. Because that's the end of the story released in an OVA, and you do not want to spoiler yourself that way before finishing other things.
Okay. So, what I kind of found refreshing in this first trade, and I'm certain it's going to change before the end of this comics run, is that there's no will they, won't they tension sexual relationship with Kenshin and Kaoru. Is that how you would pronounce her name?
Kaoru, yeah.
Like, it was refreshing to read this and have there not be that will they want the tension. But I'm fairly certain that it will start, that it will come up.
I don't...
Does it not? Oh, God, I'd be so happy.
I don't think it's a tension. I think it's... do you even want me to say?
Yes or no. I mostly wanted to comment that it's refreshing that it's not there here.
Yeah. And no, that's fair.
I think that's also, like, why... That's one of the things I also really like about One Piece, kind of to tie us between comics is that in One Piece there's no will they won't they tension at all with any of the people on the ship, and it's just like, oh good, I can have a nice anime show where there's no awkward sexual tension or fan service related to a specific relationship. That's really nice. And like, to read this, it's like, okay, they're obviously in this close relationship, but maybe the age difference is there stopping them. They're like 9 years apart, I think.
He's 28.
Yeah, he's 28 and she's like 19, I think it says.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe it's a little bit of like the 9, 10 year difference. I don't know, but it's refreshing to not see it here.
Let's math this. He was 14 when he started being an assassin, and then he did that for like 3 years. So it's been 11 years. He's 28. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So like, it's just, I don't know. I feel like that's something that happens so much when there's a male and a female. And I think I feel especially this way after Ranma 1/2, where mm-hmm. it's all about the relationship. And because we were talking about Inuyasha earlier.
Oh, yeah.
God damn it. I wasted so many fucking hours of that on the television.
I will say this, because I don't think it's too spoilery. The focus is not so much on that as to whether or not Kenshin should make a moral decision about something entirely different in one direction or another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I think you mentioned earlier how she'll have this anxiety about whether or not he's going to go Roroni on her, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that probably is something that would become inevitable, but I think there's so much tied to that. You know? And there's so much tied to him wanting to have that lifestyle, and it's like, that's also a conscious decision for him, is do I make the decision to stop being a Roroni and stay here? And maybe I take care of the dojo? I'm not going to fight because I don't want to pass down this style because it's fucking horrific. You know, so I'm not going to teach anybody this, but, you know, maybe I can be here and run the hot bath water for her. Which is just going to lead to something creepy. It just naturally would, I feel. I don't know.
Yeah, it's, I think it's, there's a focus on duty and the power of friendship, all those things. But I will say this comic has the benefit of never being plagued by the drama llama.
Oh, thank God. Okay. Then I'm even happier about going and watching the show. So what did we think of the art of this comic?
I liked it. I thought the it's compared to Ranma, this is a lot better. And I think maybe that's why upon first reading it, I was like, oh man, this is great art. But you know, I think it's pretty good overall. Certainly better than Ranma, and I think it's a little bit better than Volume 1 of One Piece.
Yeah, I definitely think it is.
Yeah, I think this was Watsuki's, like, first big thing. I don't know if he did earlier work, or any other work, for that matter. Because his whole career has been focused on, like, the various licensing for Kenshin. Like, video games, computer games, dolls, plushies, whatever. And, I will say, I did really like the art for this. Until I read the wrong manga for this arc. And I accidentally read Roroni Kenshin Restoration, which I hadn't seen before. And I'm glad I did, because I looked at that, and it's a parallel universe setting, so the plot's not the same, it's just the same characters and, like, themes. But the art in that was, like, a straight-up 5. It's some of the best manga art I've seen, and that's about, like, 12, 15 years after the guy started doing this, so, like, we get a huge development in his skills from the beginning of his career to where he is now, and it's like, whoa. But I do like this a lot. It's just, now I've seen what he can do today. And it's so amazeballs.
Yeah. So. It's tough. And we have a thing in here, like, lots of action lines, and I mean, that's part of manga, I think. But I think even I think this is of the three that we've read now for this second manga series, I think this is the best of the three. I think this is better than the first trade of One Piece, and I definitely think this is better than Ranma One Health. But I think that's a stylistic thing with Ranma. But even like the background detail is richer in this than it was in One Piece. There's a lot more details in the background in certain scenes. And like you said, Jen, you kind of have to evaluate some people by character design.
By some people, do you mean creators?
Yeah, you have to, like, some of the artists, what you really need to look at is the way that the characters are designed and how they look and feel. And I think there's a good enough attention to detail in here that I like the character design. Like you were saying, how the officials have the westernized clothing and the westernized appearance. Like, the one dude even has, like, a western mustache. You know? Like, for a certain, like, there's that level of detail that I think a lot of other comics wouldn't go to in the character creation. That said, there are a couple oversights. Like, Sensuke walks around with that big thing, like that big staff along his back, and it's like a staff, and then when he opens it up, it's like this big fucking sword, and it's like, wait, but last issue it was just like a staff. Where the fuck did the sword come from?
Yeah.
So there's fold it up.
There's a couple oversights like that, but generally I would say my only major complaint about this art is when you're getting into a fight scene, there's too much, like, I guess it would be like blood spray and action lines mixed together. And so there's sometimes I was like, where is he cutting? What is happening here?
Actually, now that you mentioned it, that's something that I kind of... It made me gloss over those panels.
Yeah.
Because it was hard to see what was happening, like you said. And you see that he can do, like, action-packed panels where... He uses a lot of action lines to convey speed and stuff, particularly the one where the gun is smashed.
Yeah.
You can tell he's moving really fast and powerfully, but you see what's happening. And that's not something that's the exception, I think.
Yeah. The other times where he's fighting, like, the other Batosai imposter,
mm-hmm.
it's like, okay, I don't know what the fuck is happening here. I got nothing.
Yeah, it gets kind of busy.
There's lines and splatter. I don't know.
You know, now that I realize just now that you mentioned, you said blood spray, but I mean, is it really blood since he's...
That's right, he's using the blunt side of the sword, so it's not blood, is it?
No.
It's just...
He just knocks them out.
Yeah. So it's interesting that they would show... That style was chosen to show, like, these... I mean, killing blows, not the right term, but... It's like the finishing move, right?
Yeah.
It's just like intensity or something. Like, I...
Oh, so that's how you draw intensity.
No. Yeah, that's the secret.
Yeah, but other than that stuff, which I think is a shame because this is a comic about action and fights, but then the action and fights get like, what the fuck is going on here? But other than those parts, I feel like this was some of the better manga art we've seen on this show, which I think it's awesome that apparently 15 years down the line, the creator gets way better, even.
It's just, like, gorgeous, gotta say. Like, I'm still, like, head over heels for it.
Would it be spoilery if I went and read the first trade of that one?
Yeah, don't do it.
Okay. Oh, wait, I'll at least watch the anime. And then I just want to see this art. If it's like a five art, I just want to go see it.
Just, like, I don't know, do a Google search for, like, a random page or something.
All right, I might try that.
That would suit you.
Okay.
So, Jen, is this a manga that's still going on, or is the story completed?
This is completed, so if you wanted to read, I think, all... I don't even know how many volumes there are anymore. 28, maybe? They're all out there. They're translated very well into English, too. Like, even the fan translations are pretty good at this point. Because I know, like, a lot of the time with a manga early in, you get fan translations and they're crazy. This has been out long enough that most of them are pretty high quality.
Nice. Cool. All right, you guys ready to rate this?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
All right, David, how about you go first?
Oh man, that's what I get for being all gung ho. I'm gonna give this. See, this is kind of hard because the last two mangas we read, I had some preconceptions about them because I had experienced them in one way or another. Like One Piece, I love the anime and I'm all caught up on it, all 600 something episodes. Ranma, I knew about it and knew that it was popular when I was in school in junior high and stuff. It was very popular amongst the anime crowd because it was one of the few animes that you could get easily in the early 90s. But Kenshin, like I said, I had seen it on, I'd caught a couple episodes on Toonami, but I can't really recall what happened. I just couldn't get into it. So I was pleasantly surprised by this manga. I thought the story was interesting. The characters were definitely interesting. It's neat that it's kind of set on a semi-historical backdrop. It's kind of like historical fiction, I guess you could say. I always like historical fiction. And I really thought the art was really good. So I'm gonna give this a 4. I'm gonna at least watch this show. If not, continue reading the rest of the anime. So, or the manga. Yeah, I mean, this is a 4. I definitely would recommend this to somebody. I liked it a lot.
Nice. I'll go next. I am also gonna give this a 4. Because I feel like the art was really good. And like I said earlier, I think one of the important things for Shonen is ramping up the power level or perception of the power level in the characters. Because that's part of the buy-in with this genre. And I like that in drawing you in, Watsuki uses that draw-in to help define his character. And that's like really cool double purpose. And I don't know, just all the stuff we talked about the whole episode, this was good, and I'm going to go watch the anime. I don't know if I'm going to read the manga, because reading takes a long time, and I can watch while I work. So I might just kind of have it like on a second screen. But but I will definitely watch the anime of this. And I agree with you about the preconceived notion, because like I went into One Piece knowing I was going to love it, so I think I rated it down extra hard because I didn't want to be biased. And then Ramen 1/2, I think I honestly rated that one. But this one, I think I had a preconceived notion negatively because I looked at the cover for Kenshin Restoration. And I was like, oh, that looks like Inuyasha. And I thought I was in for a fucking shitstorm.
This is definitely better than Inuyasha. And like you, Andy.
Yes.
I don't know how I did it, but I have probably watch that entire show.
I know. I'm fucking I'm like depressed and angry at high school me for wasting time.
I think anyone who watched animation in our generation anime in our generation is guilty of doing that though.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Watching all of Inuyasha, yeah.
And I mean
accidentally.
Well, the same way we also probably all have watched all of Dragon Ball Z in one way or another.
Yep. I watched that on purpose.
Yeah.
Me too.
There was a time in my life where I thought that was awesome, and I still think it's awesome. At least from a memory standpoint, it's awesome to me.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm giving it a 4. How about you, Jen, with the final word?
I cannot downrate this based on bias. I just this comic started it for me. I picked it up one day on like the recommendation of a friend, and I was like 15 at the time, and I still love it like with all my heart. I cannot look at it without getting super excited about the story and the characters and the art and everything. I keep buying stuff for it, like so Viz actually just released these gorgeous Viz Big editions that all contain 3 volumes in one. So, they're actually a pretty good deal in terms of money. It's $18 for 3 volumes instead of, like, you know, $10 for 3. So, you save money. And parts of it are in color. I'm really enjoying them. I can watch this anime infinity number of times and not get tired of it. It's a 5 for me. It's just, like, it shaped my tastes in comics and manga and anime for more than half my life. I can't not give it a 5. It was so influential. I love it.
Awesome. I'm down for that. It's a perfectly acceptable answer. Fucking awesome. So that wraps up Rurouni Kenshin. Next week, we're going to do the last episode of our manga redux arc. We're going to read Berserk, Volume 1, by Kentaro Miura. God, I know I fucked that up.
Yeah.
Do you want to help me?
Kentaro Miura.
Yeah, there you go. That guy. That guy wrote Berserk. And we're going to read it's the first three stories, I think. The Black Swordsman, The Brand, and The Guardians of Desire. Apparently. Ooh. That's the name of the first three stories. So we're going to read those, and that's going to wrap up our manga arc. And then after that, I think we're going to do our cheesecake arc. We've been talking about it for a while.
Oh my god, I was looking at our schedule, and I was wondering, is that really what we're going to do?
Yeah, it is. I just put it on tape, even though there's no tape here. I put it on it. We definitely have to do Witchblade, because that was a listener request.
Oh, see, there's one on here. There's one that I would like to be on here, because every time I see it in the shop, I'm very curious about it.
Which one is it?
Bomb Queen.
Bomb Queen?
Oh, my.
All right, we can put that on. Because the other one I know for sure is Witchblade. We can fuck around with a couple others.
So, Tarot the Black Rose is also a, well, kind of listener request. My boyfriend sometimes listens to this, and he wants us to do that one. So,
all right.
It's going to be a thing.
Well, since we already mentioned Tarot and Witchblade, the other two on the list are Fathom and Jungle Girl. But I would like to remove one of those two and add Bomb Queen.
Okay. I think we can remove Jungle Girl. Fathom I just put on there because every time I think of like obligatory cheesecake comics, I think of Fathom.
Okay.
let's get rid of the one that sticks up in my mind.
Let's change Jungle Girl to Bomb Queen because it's just every time I see it on the shelf, I'm like, what is this?
All right,
and yeah, it's we'll been going for a long time. Yeah. At least the entire time I've been buying comics at my current place. So like 5 years.
Oh, Jesus. That's the other thing. Is some of this like cheesecakey shit runs for so long. And I'm like, how many people are buying this? It has to be quite a few, right? Mm-hmm. To maintain sales, even though it's terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't.
Well, it might not be terrible.
Yeah, maybe we're all judging it by its cover. Like I rant about that all the time. Maybe I'm guilty of doing it.
I think that's the point of these cheesecake comics is to judge them by the cover. Anyways,
that's 2 weeks from now. Next week is Berserk, the last of our manga series, and apparently it's fucking crazy, and I can't wait for it. So that's next week. If you want to know what we end up hammering out for this cheesecake arc, you can go to www.atomicpiratesupercast.com. On the right, click on the button that says Future Shows. We should have those up in the next couple days, probably. If not, send us an email and let us know at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
And if email is not your thing, if you want to rant at us in public because then people can like your comment when you rant at us, you can do that at facebook.com/APSupercast, twitter.com/APSupercast, or apsupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.